95.3 The Score is your sports station. Log on and listen live at 95.3thescore.com.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Dan, it might be semi-circle time.
What?
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yo, welcome to Sports Talk. It's first Tuesday in March. It's a beautiful thing. Thanks for checking in. So during the break, I got aggravated. That happens a lot, by the way, when you spend a lot of time on Twitter. Yeah, I asked for it. So first let's welcome you. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. We'll talk with Bev Smith at the bottom of the hour. And as far as with the men, we're 2 days away from the final weekend of Pac-12 regular season kicking in. The women's tournament is set for later this week in Vegas. By the way, the NBA regular season ends in less than 6 weeks. So, tick, 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 da 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 da, da boom. Got news and notes from the association, from MLB as, hell, what are we, 4 weeks from maybe it's tomorrow, maybe it's 4 weeks from tomorrow, I think the regular season begins, because we get another March start, and we also have some digressions to get to, which we will talk about in a bit. And yeah, for those who are tuning in now and who've been asking me from Sunday night and yesterday, it was on Sunday night. It's only Tuesday. I saw the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David basically finally got to take a shot at the New York Jets, who, if you've been a Jets fan for as long as people his age, my age, and, you know, yeah, they are the worst, and they make people's life miserable. And, we'll explain that.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
So today the Pac-12 handed out their women's accolades. And it was, you can't do a clean sweep because you can't have, well, I don't know. Has anybody ever had first team or one team? And the sixth player of the year, and the freshman of the year, and the defensive player of the year, and the coach of the year. Oregon gave it a hell of a run. Sabrina, Pac-12 player of the year, third consecutive year. Taylor Chavez, sixth player of the year. Coach Graves, John Wooden, coach of the year. And Mignon Moore, first team, all defense. And on and on and on, and it was a good day again in the midst of many, many good years for the U of O. But this at Hoopism, at Women's World, posted something. I hadn't seen it until somebody retweeted it. I would have picked one of these two as Pac-12 Coach of the Year, and it said something that I found kind of, if I were an Oregon fan or member of the program, I'd be kind of pissed off because Adia Barnes, fantastic year for Arizona. And I think the other one is Coach Close of UCLA. So the gist was the awards came out, and this Twitter handle said, I would have picked one of these two as Pac-12 Coach of the Year. Did so much with two groups of hardworking athletes that never gave up. And it's like, so the team that's always up by 30, yet is diving after loose balls, hustling their ass back on defense, crashing the boards, and just showing an unyielding effort as long as there's a millisecond left on the clock, they don't deserve it because it's a, to me, this is a classic case of devil's advocate.
You know, I'm going to go out there and say somebody else should have won it. Maybe we'll get some attention.
It's terrible. And I very rarely curse on Twitter, but I retweeted. This is a horse poop take. I did not use poop. And said it insinuates Oregon does less than bust their ass or work as hard as anyone. And then I asked, watch the games much up 30. They're diving after loose balls, hustling back on defense, and crashing the boards. They never quit. Unyielding effort. Heart of a lion, 24-7. Brutal. That's a terrible take by whatever I said there was. Hoopism. Should be moronism. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Kurt. Kurt, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. Beautiful day.
Yep. What's
up? Isn't a big part of college coaching recruiting to getting the good players?
Yeah. Find fault for excellence. So I don't understand.
Hey, I got another thing. I get to drive to work at ODARK 30, and one of the little joys I get is AM radio, where when it's dark, you can pick up from all over the place. So lately, I've been listening to a station out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Really? Down here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's got to be huge. I don't know what kind of pop, like Mexico City used, Wolfman Jack used to have out of Mexico. But so this morning, the news, they're going over about Spike Lee and the issue, and to explain it to Albertans who don't really follow much of the NBA, but maybe Toronto, they explained Spike Lee was sort of the Knicks Drake, which I thought you would appreciate and had to share.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the call. Spike, obviously, when the Knicks were good and won the title, was a wee bairn. Although, if you're familiar with, I don't know if I want to call it, it wasn't commercially successful. It's called Crooklyn, and it takes place in the spring of 1973 in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy, Bedford-Stuyvesant. And it was a couple of years, I think Do the Right Thing was 89, 90. You sure about that?
Why? I Googled it.
No, I was going to say, why would you know that?
Oh, because I Googled it. Because I was trying to see, because I'm trying to think of like how I, a young person, once Kurt said he's the New York Knicks Drake, I was like, oh, that makes 110%. He's a huge fan. Obviously, Drake to a higher level where he's a part of the ownership group or whatever. But like right now in the moment, I understand Drake's international superstardom. I don't with Spike Lee because I've only seen half of one of his movies and it was Black Klansman, and I wasn't like mentally prepared for I think what was actually going to happen in that movie and like halfway through I had to stop because I was feeling sick. Like I was not prepared for
it's a great movie.
It was good, but I just like wasn't in the, I was just like, oh yeah, I've heard good things about this, I think I can watch this now, and I wasn't ready, so I had to stop.
Yeah, he could be a little intense, and this one was semi-autobiographical. The mom, and you would absolutely recognize the dad, Delroy Lindo. Alfre Woodard was the mom. She's played in a lot of great things. And like I said, they were living in Brooklyn in 1973, the year the Knicks won their last championship. He's a struggling musician. And like I said, that, and I think Spike is 2 years younger than, older than me. I think he's born in 57 or 58. So by the time he had all that success in the mid-90s, and was able to, you know, afford Knicks tickets where he used to sit and have his back and forth with Reggie Miller. Anyway, the gist was that Drake now sits courtside. I mean, drawing a parallel between a celebrity and a team. Jack Nicholson and the Lakers of the 80s, Spike Lee and the Knicks of the 90s, annoying Drake and Toronto of 45 minutes ago. You know, back in the day at the Garden, there was a veritable who's who. You would see like Walter Cronkite and Tom Brokaw. All the filmmakers used to go there. I mean, even Streisand would show up, and she's not really a sports fan. Woody Allen has always been a Knicks fan. And just trying to think, Blazers have anybody connected? Baseball, when the Cubs initially made their first run that most people witnessed in 2003, you started to see Cusack and Bill Murray at the games. Was there any celebrities at Giants games, you know? I don't think I can make a connection. Obviously, when the Dodgers and Lakers are good, I mean, freaking Hollywood.
It's L.A. That's cheating. I don't know if
they're there already.
Yeah, they just happen to be in L.A. and the Dodgers are like, hey, we'll give you a jersey and some really nice close seats that you can not sit in and pay attention to a baseball game. The only time I remember big stars coming out was, I think it's the Yankees played in San Francisco for the first time in like a millennium because of the interleague play thing. And like Billy Crystal was at a Giants game and like, oh, yeah, he's been a long time Giants fan. Loved them for forever. It's like, Billy Crystal, really? A Giants
Yankees fan?
And they were just like, oh, he's there as a Giants fan or something like that. I don't know. Maybe Billy Crystal was the strange Yankee fan that was there, but he lives on the West Coast or something. I don't know. There's no like famous Giants fan. E-40. E-40 is the big Giants fan. Just as a Bay Area guy.
Like 5 errors for the center fielder instead of E8 times 5. Geez.
No, E40 is big into all the Bay Area sports. Guy Fieri is turning into quite the Warriors fan. He's a Raiders fan as well. I don't know if he's going to be moving with them to Vegas as a part of his fandom or not. What else do we get?
You know, when they were not good, one of the funny things you used to see at, like, Clippers games was Arsenio Hall and Billy Crystal. They were not on the Laker bandwagon. You had to be one of 47 people at the old L.A. Sports Coliseum watching that pathetic. Oh, by the way, how did I miss this one? Jerry Seinfeld and the Mets. Hello. He's quite often been seen. I'm just trying to think, is there really a celebrity connection with the Celtics? Now that I think about it, when the Red Sox were breaking the curse, you started to see Ben Affleck and Dennis Leary. Ben Affleck? I tried to turn him. Ben Affleck! Ben Affleck! Suddenly,
I didn't think you were wrong, necessarily.
Dennis Leary and I forget his last name is Clark. Boston area comedians started showing up actually in the booth at Red Sox games, calling it on WSBK or WEEI with Joe Castiglione.
It was Rob Schneider who was the celebrity Giants fan that they were able to pull out of nowhere to show up to this Yankees game. Also, Colin Hanks is a big Giants fan as well.
You know what? I knew that. I remember seeing him now. Yeah. And Tom Hanks is an A's fan, actually. Have you ever seen some of the specials with he and dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Can't touch this. MC Hammer was like buddies with the late owner, Charles Finley, of those teams from the dynasty that won it all in 72, 73, and 74.
It also appears that the late Robin Williams was also a Giants fan. There's a picture of him standing next to Barry Bonds. So there you go. Giants have three.
Robin Williams actually used to incorporate the 49ers. For, you know, because obviously he became really big during the 80s, and talk about the professors at USF and Cal Berkeley, but you get him to a Niners game and they're all like, Niners! Just
is that where that Tannenism comes from?
It's yeah.
From, oh, wow.
It's all totally right. Stolen from Robin Williams.
Wow.
284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yes, Stephen King, the what's the
Red Sox?
Yeah, Red Sox. But I'm just trying to say, horror writer, fear writer. I can't read him because he scares me. Writer,
author. I think he
author.
He just writes books. They happen to be scared. He's
somebody said, isn't Adam Sandler a fan of some team? That narrows it down.
Yeah, probably. I could see him rooting for teams.
Hey, we saw Mariota at Nashville games.
I think that's more association necessarily than fandom.
Yeah, something tells me growing up in Hawaii in the 43 years he played at Oregon, he wasn't really big into the Preds.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the Predators are only like 20 years old, 25 years. They're about as old as Marcus is, and I don't think necessarily Nashville's first goal with expanding their fandom was Hawaii, a state that's four time zones away.
Yeah, like they were. Is that their target audience?
I don't think so.
Three-star quarterbacks in Hawaii. That's what we need more of, and in Nashville to root on the Predators.
We need more newborns becoming immediate hockey diehard fans that are willing to travel to Nashville for games so their parents can take them here.
Just trying to think of the days. And obviously what happens is, when do you see a lot of the celebrities that you didn't know there was a connection?
Playoffs.
World Series, right. Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, you know, the Yankees are in the ALCS, and they start panning the audience, and there's a mayor, and there's a governor, and there's a celebrity who's an Academy Award winner, and a singer, and an actor.
And there's a guy who just so happens to be on a show that's on the network showing the game. That
boom.
Just so happens to be a fan. Yeah. Like, that's why Rob Lowe at the NFC Championship game was wearing the most boring NFL logo hat, is because the Fox was like, hey, we're going to send you to the game to promote your new show. What team do you root for? Is it the Niners or is it the Packers? He's like, neither. I don't really like sports. And so we're like, okay, wear an NFL hat then.
Wow.
Or has a third team or something.
Yeah, that I would say for real diehard fans drives us nuts.
Oh, yeah.
When they do the cutaway and they go into the crowd at Fox or CBS and NBC, and they do the live promo while a game is going on. And you can tell sometimes, you know, they are actors, and so some of them actually maybe do a little rehearsal, get some information from their publicist. Others, you could tell they're like, this is going to be like a minute, right? Could I give generic answers? I don't know why I'm here. I don't know who's playing. And I would rather be used as military target practice.
I think the last time that actually they tried that and it went very poorly was on a college football game where they had Eminem in the booth with Kirk Herbstreit and, Mr. You Are Looking Live. What's his name?
Musburger.
I wanted to call him Musgrave for some reason. I knew that was wrong.
A great duck quarterback.
It was close. But Eminem was in the booth, and he was just looking completely spaced out of his mind, didn't know what
was
going on.
Plus, he's a Detroit guy.
Well, right. Like, Michigan was playing. And let's promote Eminem's stuff, and he was a record label. I don't know what the deal was, but Eminem was very bad on that broadcast. And I think they were just like, oh, we'll just show the people in the stands that they're there.
Well, I don't think for just bad and just disappointing, and I think the people involved weren't aware until it was too late when Game Day showed up at Palo Alto and Plunkett was the guest picker. Basically, his answer for everything was, yeah, I really don't follow college football that much. And it was just like, it just was so bad. He was so disinterested and so disinteresting or uninteresting. It's just like, you do get, although sometimes they get a guest picker on Game Day that just crush it.
Right.
I'll tell you what, years ago, I think it might have been Timberlake, who's a Michigan guy. And
Memphis?
Nick Lachey, maybe. Am I?
Justin Timberlake is a part of the Memphis Grizzlies ownership group.
No, I blew it. I'm thinking of somebody of that genre, that age, like 10 years ago. It had to do with Michigan. And they did a cutaway to him, and he gave an analysis that Desmond Howard and Herbstreit were like, dude knows his stuff. I mean, he's just spot on. And now I feel like a yo-yo because I can't figure out who the hell it was.
We just had, I believe it's at Sir Ducks-a-Lot just tweeted me, Rob Lowe is a Colts fan. So he was playing the total neutral card of supporting the NFL while he was doing his network-mandated appearance at an NFC Championship game.
And by the way, calling it a network-mandated appearance, that is absolutely frigging perfect.
It's exactly spot what it is.
On
yeah.
explanation.
There aren't enough Reno, or what? Not Reno 911, 911 Austin commercials on during the NFC Championship game. You actually had to stick Rob Lowe into a random like luxury suite, give him a dumb NFL hat, and be like, here, sit there for 45 seconds, and then when we've done the live promotion after watching 5 minutes of commercials for this show, we'll make sure to mention it during the game one more time.
By the way, somebody just, Kurt, who just called, said Tim Allen, the lone Detroit Lions fan.
Oh, he's the one, huh?
Although, if you watch Beverly Hills Cop, and even though I know he's a Jersey guy, in the first Beverly Hills Cop, Eddie Murphy has a very cool Detroit Lions jacket on.
Can you imagine being a celebrity fan of a really bad team like the Lions, and you get to go to the game, wear the paper bag over your head, be the cool guy who's like, yeah, man, support the team, we suck, way to be here. Like, everybody loves you for being like paper bag guy, and then underneath you're Tim Allen. That would be the best way to
get
watch
unearthed.
A football game. Oh, man.
You get unearthed. Look who it is!
Nobody's ripping the bag off your head. Come on, nobody would do that.
Just trying to think. Hockey-wise, I don't remember any... You know, the one team that really captured the imagination of the country from the 90s into the 2000s, and they even won it again in the late 2000s, were the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, that was hockey town. That was, you know, throwing the octopus on the ice. But I don't remember a real celebrity of any kind being synonymous.
Al Michaels with the LA Kings. I believe he has season tickets, and they'll show him all the time.
I didn't know that.
Who's the really Vince Vaughn? I think is also an LA Kings fan. But again, it's LA, and like when they were in the finals, they would just show celebrities that are at the games that got to go to the games because they're celebrities at that point and get to play up their fandom.
I actually think Vince Vaughn is a Chicago guy and a Cubs fan. I think he's a second city dude.
That would make sense because I think it was a Kings Blackhawk Stanley Cup.
All right. So there you go. St. Louis Cardinals. Somebody just mentioned John Hamm of Mad Men, but I think when the Cardinals make a run, they're probably, aside from the Dodgers, the most popular National League club, because a lot of people of a certain age who grew up in mid-America, and, you know, like when we talk with George Schroeder, if you grew up around there, that I think it's KMOX had, you know, 100,000-watt blowtorch, and people would listen to Joe Buck at night. And there's a lot of Cardinal fans that aren't from St. Louis but surrounding states that don't have professional baseball.
John Hamm was very big with the Blues making their Stanley Cup run, as well as Jenna Fischer, who was Pam on The Office, and then John Krasinski, who was Pam and Jim. He was Jim on The Office. He's a Bruins fan.
Yeah, somebody said John Hamm is a St. Louis Cardinals fan, thus the Blues thing ties in perfectly. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break, come back, and we'll have a Coors Light update, and we'll talk with Bev Smith of Kids Sports coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
Chavez, no hesitation there. Taylor Chavez comes in and makes something happen. And there's a takeaway by Chavez. Defense to offense for the Ducks. More. Out to Chavez. Sticks it.
Yo, welcome back. Some highlights from the sophomore, Taylor Chavez, who's won today the Pac-12 Sixth Player of the Year, who will be one of the leaders of this program heading into next year with the magnificent quartet departing. Welcome back to Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. While our recent talks have been face-to-face leading up to Oregon hoops, and it's been a lot of fun, but as the Ducks prep to attack Vegas, we bring in the executive director of Kids Sports on the phone line. You can follow on Twitter, use the handle at Kids Sports Bev. Bev Smith joins us. Hey, Bev, how's your Tuesday going?
Tuesday's great. The sun's out a little bit. We are, as the both men's and women's team for Oregon are sort of at the tail end of their regular season. Our kids' sports basketball teams are finishing off this weekend and also next weekend, and then we'll be outside ready for soccer. So the weather is cooperating.
For now. Let's see how it is when we stop this conversation. First things first. The Civic Stadium Project, folks can learn more, still make a contribution, EugeneCivicAlliance.com. So where are we at, Bev, and how pleased are we with the progress?
Well, we're really close, Steve, and just a shout-out to our community that has really helped us to build out, you know, a dream and a vision we had a number of years ago to have a new space and place for not just our kids, but our community to, you know, be active, have access to active, healthy activities. And as people may have noticed driving by Amazon or on Willamette, that Chambers Construction has done an excellent job in staying on time with the construction, and we are close to actually laying the floor in a couple of weeks. Whoa. In the field house. All the baskets and the hoops have been up for a week now, and we are looking to have occupancy of the building around May 21st.
So the tradition is, you know, first somebody put a golden shovel in the ground, then there's going to be a ribbon cutting ceremony. Who gets to make the first basket? Is that going to be you?
we could have a lottery for that. That might be another way of helping us to finish some fundraising that we still have to do for the program. So good idea, Steve.
I give that idea to you to make with it what you may.
Okay, thank you. That's why I hang out with you.
You know, we did the pregame Sunday, but one question, because after, I thought Coach Graves brought up something about Mignon Moore, who today was named first-team all-defense Pac-12, and, you know, the Ducks were a Final Four team last year, but about 190th in defensive efficiency. She comes in, now they're top 30. I mean, what is it about her game that she's just so impactful on that side of the ball?
Yeah, I think that we certainly, or at least I did, and Terry Johns had a very beautiful front row view of that. And, you know, I think as a fifth-year senior, Terry always used to say she used to drive him nuts when they went down and played USC because he was so effective in stealing the ball and disrupting the offense. And, you know, even playing 94 feet, she gets up and into people pretty quickly. She also positions herself very well. I get the young girls I'm coaching to try and play defense as she does in terms of moving her feet and playing positionally and slowly, methodically just driving that opposing point guard or guard a little bit crazy that they end up giving you the ball. But I think she just has a knack for that defensive preparation that she does. And she told me in a post-game interview that she does study some film, and she looks to see what the tendencies are of that point guard. I don't know if you noticed or any of the fans noticed, but she would fill up just as the guard was getting the inbound ball and cause them to either turn the ball over or to, you know, cough it up to her. And she got those really, really key turnovers that really just take a lot of rhythm out of the offensive end. And I think she's allowed Oregon to go from what we saw last year and the previous years from a very positional sort of static defensive team to a more dynamic steel team, that they're going to take the ball off of you, not just finish it with a strong rebound.
We're talking with Kids Sports Executive Director Bev Smith. You guys have a really cool event coming up, kind of double-pronged, Monday the 9th, next Monday, then a week from Thursday the 12th, and with the opening of the new facility getting so close, kind of a nice gesture to say thanks to a special group who's really been at the heart of what Kids Sports has done for more than 60 years. So, Bev, the who, what, when, where is this all taking place?
Right. Well, really, the organization has been, you know, has relied on for almost 66 years the volunteer coaches of this community and the men and women who have stepped up just year after year to coach thousands and thousands and thousands of children have been thousands and thousands of volunteer coaches. And as we prepare to open the building in June, we are extending an early invitation to all of our past and present coaches, and which is why I wanted to come on the radio today, Steve. We have certainly mailing lists from 6 to 7 years in our database through our email. But, you know, for 66 years, there's some coaches out there that we might have lost some contact with, and we wanted to get on the radio and say, look, we want you to come by the Fieldhouse on Monday, March 9th from 3 to 5 if you can, and also because 3 to 5 is when a lot of people work. We've given two opportunities for Thursday, March 12th from 3 to 5. We would like to do it a little bit later, but it is an active construction site, so our construction company is working hard with us to provide some access. And we'd like you to come in, and before the floor is laid, just take a look at the building, have a sneak peek, and we'd like to have your signature on the floor before we throw that wood on it, because you are certainly the foundation of our organization. So you can contact me, or you can certainly, we're asking to pre-register for numbers, and you can go to kidsports.org/fieldhouse open house to let us know that you'll come by next Monday or Thursday.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing tribute. And, you know, for those, obviously, now you're moving forward. You've got the new facility, you know, ever growing. For folks who are interested, you know, what is the process to become a Kids Sports volunteer?
Well, the process is fairly straightforward, and we try to make it user-friendly. So you can visit our website at www.kidsports.org, and on the homepage you can link to coaches, and it will take you through all of the information you need to sign up as a volunteer coach. Obviously, we are heading out to play lacrosse. Practices will start next week. We have our first coaches meeting tomorrow night. We still do need some lacrosse coaches, and registration is open on a needs and space availability. And of course, classic soccer has a registration deadline of this Friday, with our rec third and fourth grade soccer the following Friday on the 13th. So lots of opportunities for you to just check it out, be a volunteer coach. And as we say, you know, a good coach can change a game, but a great coach can change a life, which is why we're really trying to bring our coaches in to celebrate all that they've done for our community.
A couple final thoughts for Bev Smith of Kids Sports. You know, I've had a lot of people ask, kind of as we get close, what the finished product is going to look like. Obviously, we can't paint them a picture on radio, but as far as the fields, the courts, the versatility, you know, what's going to be out there? What kind of sports are going to be played on all these various playing surfaces?
Well, yes, and the building and the turf field were built with that in mind. Kids Sports has forever been a multi-sport organization that really promotes the global development of our kids through multi-sport opportunities. And so while we will continue our core program, Steve, where our coaches will come in and get equipment and take it out to neighborhood schools where kids are and can practice, and we will use the great partnership we have with our schools and city to still deliver some of the programs. The building itself is a 40,000 square foot building that has four full-size middle school basketball courts that can be converted into volleyball courts. We will do some pickleball. We will do some indoor futsal. We have some idea of maybe doing some indoor team handball, you know, adding to some activities that we current aren't able to run because of the lack of space. We'd like to do some functional fitness, which is just the athletic development of our young kids, and certainly some tiny tot physical literacy classes, some tumbling classes, some perhaps junior wrestling that I think is a great entry-level sport for children to discover their athletic stance, because as you know, Steve, no stance, no chance. And so we will, you know, certainly have a lot of that information rolling out as we get things scheduled I can tell anyone listening that we're looking to have a pretty cool opening ceremony the first week of June, around Saturday, June 6th. So stay tuned for those that information on our website at kidsports.org and on the ECA website, the Eugene Civic Alliance.org website as well.
You know, as the many, many, many times we've spoken, I always have to hit on a favorite topic because I never know if a parent, an aunt, an uncle, a guardian is listening. And on your website, you got quotes from Wayne Gretzky, you know, Team USA women's soccer star Alex Morgan, and, you know, people can link articles and information. But again, how important is it? Don't specialize. Get young athletes to play multiple sports.
Yes, and we have a saying that says the more sports you play, the more you get out of sports. And I think it's really important that, you know, our parents do some research, and it's not just, you know, kids sports that's saying, hey, play two or three sports. It really helps you globally development. It kind of parallels what we do in school. We don't just let kids in third and fourth and fifth grade study just arithmetic. You know, they need to study other subjects so that they can even be better at arithmetic, and it's the same for our physical and athletic development. And certainly playing more sports allows you to develop physically in a way that just playing one sport won't allow you to. So that's why the organization, I think, has been alive and kicking for almost 66 years, because it does really have the child's best interest in mind in terms of that development factor. And certainly there's other organizations that do really good things for kids, but playing a couple of sports up until high school really has shown it helps you become a better person and a better athlete.
All right, close with this. I call it a radio reset. You've got this awesome event coming up Monday, and then a week from Thursday, paying homage to the great volunteers. Again, let the folks who you want to come on down or to get the word out what they need to know.
Yes, and so we sent some emails to our database of our current and past coaches of the 7 years. But if you know someone and you know they've been a kids sports coach, please let them know. We'd love to have them over because they've been the foundation of this organization. They really have built this community organization into what it is today. So bring them on by. We will be hosting you on Monday, March 9th from 3 to 5, and then Thursday, March 12th from 3 to 5 at Civic Site. You can enter the parking lot off of Amazon or 20th Street. We will have parking attendants there to help you, and it'd just be a great way to give tribute to people in this community who have made this all happen.
It sounds awesome. And again, learn more at kidsports.org. Follow Bev on Twitter at kidsportsbev. Bev, always fun. Always enjoy our chats. Thanks for stopping by, and look forward to talking soon.
Thank you, Steve, and go Ducks and go Kids.
All right, take care. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Real quick shout-out to our friends at Small World Auto, 2090 West 11th in Eugene, and they are celebrating 50 years, a half century of providing their unique A-plus service to you folks from the same location, the same owner, family-owned automotive service center. They have grown incredibly over that half century. They now have a state-of-the-art 13 service bay repair shop, a machine shop, and like my buddy Marty has told me, if you're not yet a member, they'd love to have you as a member of the Small World family, be it domestic or import. If you're import, if your car needs service, call Small World Auto and keep up on those scheduled maintenance checkpoints, be it your 30, your 60, your 90,000 mile checkups, replace those service items. They've got an impeccable reputation for integrity and standing behind their work. Small World Auto, the number 228-9774, online smallworldauto.com, and we greatly appreciate their longtime support of our programs. All right, break time. We'll do that. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour of sports talk next. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Stay home for the first and second rounds. Nelson Adota, she's had a defender on her back all night. Finds Dangerfield and one. I mean, it is a freight train rolling downhill out of control right now. You can't stop it.
That was last night. The UConn women's basketball team beat South Florida 80-39. And why did I bring that up? Because that statistic that scrolled last night that literally made me, we had just finished watching something on Amazon Prime. And I was like, wait. Because, you know, the joy of the ESPN scroll is it's constant. You know it's going to come back, but you know sometimes you get a little impatient and you're like, did I see what I just think I saw? Especially if it's like a trade deadline or free agent period, or if you're throwing an eyeball because you want to know, you know, what happened the latest in the draft. So, as we've seen, the UConn women have gone from they never lose, they're invincible, everybody plays the entire season just so they can win another Final Four and hang another banner. And then the last couple of years, you know, I remember when we were down there in Glendale for the men in the 2017 Final Four, the night before the UConn team got buzzer beaten by Mississippi State. And, you know, oh, so they can lose. Didn't know that was a thing. But that's the losses they've had, you know, this year to Oregon and, you know, the like I said, losing in the tournament. And it turns out that, you know, for the most part in the last couple of years, I may be able to expand to the last few years. They don't win every game they play. With a catch. So they left the Big East when, you know, the conference kind of dissolved. We saw it happen in football, and all of a sudden it was like, especially for not people who aren't diehards, you would see, oh, they're playing a team from the AAC. Are they spelling the Atlantic Coast Conference wrong? What the hell does that even mean? And, you know, you learned it was kind of a combination of some Big East teams and Conference USA and maybe a straggler here or there. But UConn, who this year lost to Baylor, and their other loss was to South Carolina, and another loss was to Oregon. Oh, the numbers 1, 2, and 3 dominating teams. But 7 years in the American Athletic, they never lost. They never lost the conference game. They won 118-0. Wow. And that came to fruition last night. And I don't think it could be more impressive that they literally won every game in conference for 7 years. But in the neighborhood, the average margin of victory over those 7 years and 118 games was 41 points. So it wasn't like, man, they just keep pulling these wins out here and there. And by the way, a different day, a different time, a different year, different circumstances, they also played Tennessee and Notre Dame. So when they step out of conference, they're not messing around. And they're going to leave the American Athletic and rejoin the Big East next year. And I'm like, so that's going to change what? I'm game. Whatever you got. Because there's one Big East team that's nationally ranked. That's DePaul. Oh, and by the way, UConn went into DePaul in Chicago this year and beat them by 10 on the road. So it's they also played Cal out of the Big Ten, Pac-12. They played Vanderbilt out of the SEC, went there. Virginia, Ohio State, so Oklahoma. It's not like Auriemma is like, well, you know, we got the conference locked up. Let's take it easy at a league. All they do at a conference is play the best teams.
Could you imagine if they were winning their conference this easily and then not challenging themselves in non-conference games and they were still scheduling bunnies and just going 25-27-0 and being like, why are we still ranked fourth? Why are we ranked fourth? I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, and other teams, by the way, I also didn't throw in Seton Hall, which is a Big East team. They take on all comers. And by the way, next year, UConn, Stanford, for sure, will be probably 1-2 because I think the Cardinal are only losing Lexi Hull, and we saw they have like 103 McDonald's All-Americans. It's just that they're all really young. And by the way, I forgot who it was who told me, you know, with how Coach Graves is recruiting and who they got coming back, I don't think they're going to miss a beat next year. Whoa! Timeout. As a matter of fact, I'll use all three of my timeouts here. I'm sorry, I think that this program is in really good shape. Five McDonald's All-Americans coming in. Obviously, Aaron Boley is going to be back. Hopefully, Sabali Phase 2 is healthy enough to play. Sedona Prince, obviously, is viewed as a terrific player. Taylor Chavez is going to be one of the leaders of this team. The three freshmen from this year, Winterburn, Shelley, and Cochran. Lydia Giomi is coming back. But I don't know how to draw a parallel between any other sport losing the 1, 2, and 5, 1, 3, and 4, 1, 4, and 6 picks in the next draft, having, you know, three all-conference players plus in Mignon Moore, arguably your best defender, and to think that they're just going to go 17-1 in conference and 27-2 again and make a Final Four run. Now, am I going to sit here and say, no, no way, it's impossible? Hey, who the hell knew that somebody like Sabrina Ionescu could walk in as a freshman and be like, well, what the heck is that? Who the heck saw that coming? But to think that, and we went through this when the 2002 football season started, after Oregon had made their first legitimate national title run in program history. I remember there was a lot of talk, especially when they got off to a great start. Well, have they become a reload program? Yeah, and they ended up 7-6 because conference play started. And, you know, Carson Palmer came in here and said, yeah, this is a much different defense you guys had than last year. So the not missing a beat, no, you don't lose this quartet and not miss a beat. And that's not a put down. All right, hang tight. 5 o'clock hour. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
But, man, y'all got a coconut up.